This episode of AVXL was recorded on August 30th, 2018. We're going to talk about Samsung 8K TVs. We got deets, people, new projectors from Sony. Sennheiser brings the wireless earbud action at IFA along with an Ambio soundbar update. A quiet AC unit one of you found. Sonos has a new amp in Cydia 2018. It's go! All that and so much more coming up on AVXL.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home video and audio gear, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Heron.
Do you have ID?
I do. Man, I got ID. I've got visas. I've got
I had to order
access cards,
a replacement birth certificate, and I was laughing because in order to get it, I had to fax a form and a photo of my driver's license to, you know, a number in a state somewhere else.
I needed to receive a fax the other day, so I had to use an online service to obtain a fax number. Hello, fax.
Oh, hello, fax.
If you need to send
friend.
A fax, that's a great service. If you need to actually receive one, though, that'll cost you some money.
There you have it. There's a business model there. Speaking of business models, one of the things that consumer electronics companies do is release new products. Often, in the case of TVs, every single year. Not so often are major updates to Sonos products, especially the Sonos amp. And much to my shock, surprise, and delight, the Sonos amp was announced this week, replaces the Kinect amp, which is like 10 years old at this point. Which means that I've been looking at Sonos products for like 10 years.
At least.
Basically doubles the power of the Kinect amp, 125 watts per channel. I'm assuming a Class D amplifier in there. They say it'll drive low ohm loads, as in you can run four speakers off of it. This is kind of part of their new Sonic architecture series. They're going to be talking about it at Cydia next week. It's going to be distributed to U.S. installers December 1st. The rest of us and the rest of the world will get access to it in February. HDMI input, it's got ARC support, which is new for Sonos in terms of this amp device.
Right.
Really, really clean design. You're looking at about $600.
So you can use your own speakers.
Yes.
With the Kinect amp and still enjoy the...
Well, it replaces the Kinect amp.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the new Kinect amp, the Sonos amp. Yeah, what's kind of cool, right? You can use Play 1s or Sonos 1s or like Play 5s as wireless rear surrounds.
Oh, nice.
Or you can add a second Sonos amp and use a set of matching speakers. No support that I know of for a center channel, if I'm reading this correctly, but there is a subwoofer output on it still, which I love.
That's pretty cool.
Stereo amps with subwoofer outputs are the new black, as far as I'm concerned.
This sounds like it'd be perfect for someone who doesn't want to deal with an AVR. They just want the display and their speakers and the speakers they want to use. Rear channels optional, wireless, and then some.
Yeah.
I think it sounds like a pretty good package. HDMI with ARC support. That means you'll likely have power control and things like that right through whatever remote you're using to control the TV anyway. So that makes it handy. And it's good for dragging that audio from your streaming apps out of the TV and into your supporting audio amplification. All the better. And if you're a fan of Sonos, hell, that sounds like a great product.
Yeah, it supports AirPlay. It supports AirPlay 2. You know, they're like, you can power your outdoor speakers with it. You can
just updated the Sonos Beam and it added the AirPlay 2 support and other things as well, which I haven't tested in any way, but
which is pretty awesome.
It's a free update. What the hell?
One of the things that was frustrating for Sonos for a long time was while the app was excellent, you had to use the app to access third-party services. And in the last year, they've sort of loosened up that grip and allowed you to send things to the Sonos devices through, you know, your favorite app or through AirPlay.
I really like the Sonos app. I mean, it is kind of a bucket of tools in a sense. There's a lot there, but it does everything I need and it gives me access to everything from stored local files to some of my favorite streaming apps. So.
Yeah, and we've talked about it for a while. At some point, consumer electronics manufacturers realized that there was no money to be made in Bluetooth speakers. There's still a ton of Bluetooth speakers. We'll talk about a new one in a couple of minutes. But so they were like, we're going to do Wi-Fi. We're going to do home speakers. We're going to do home speakers that have their own network so they don't, you know, have to deal with your terrible Wi-Fi at home.
Rather than the general race to the bottom with standalone Bluetooth speakers or battery powered.
And what a lot of consumer electronic companies realized was that the speakers from Sonos sound very, very good. But the real kind of secret sauce there was the fact that the application worked. period. And I was thinking about that a lot when a friend of mine gave me a Duvalier Phantom that he couldn't get running. He's like, you want to play this? I'm like, yes, I want to play with the $2,000 super speaker.
Sure.
You know, because, hey, you know, personally, I think I would rather have a set of Sonos Play 1s and a sub, or a Sonos amp and a sub, than the Duvalier speaker. But that's a whole nother conversation. But because, you know, you got to spend a metric ton of money to get stereo from the Duvalier. But the thing that really killed me about the Duvalier was just exactly how atrocious the application for that is. Now, you're talking about like the new Phantom, that's like $1,700, right? Two of them is going to cost you $3,400, and it's one of the worst applications I've ever used. On the upside, you no longer have to buy a second or third. You no longer have to buy a Duvalier box to like run AirPlay to it. But the application's the thing, right? So HDMI input on that Sonos amp, it's got pass through Ethernet. You've got you know, a stereo input on that, a subwoofer output. I am very curious to hear it. I have faith that the amp is going to sound excellent because, quite frankly, as Robert and I have been telling you since, I want to say, CES 2015, there are some very inexpensive Class D amplification devices from TI and others that sound unfreaking believably good.
Incredibly low noise.
Yeah.
Clean output. At whatever power level you probably need,
yeah.
If you're looking to design something, those TI chips were the bomb, so to speak.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so 125 watts per channel, up from 55 on the Kinect amp.
Quick apology for any background noise you may hear right now, as the gardener has just shown up for the estate.
Oh, my goodness. RCA inputs, wireless surround support for stereo speakers for TV, which the Kinect amp didn't have. It's rack mountable, sports AirPlay 2. The reason they're launched with installers, I think, is because the Kinect amps are actually super popular for high-end.
It doesn't drive
audio.
A center channel? Am not I reading that properly?
There's no discrete center channel that I know of.
Well, why not add one of their awesome soundbars then to be your center channel?
Well, then so. You don't need the Sonos amp.
Drats!
Well, you know, I'll learn more about that. They're doing a Q&A Thursday afternoon at CD. I'll be down for that one.
Cool, yeah.
And there's also a really great in-depth look at kind of the development of the Sonos amp on The Verge. They got some early access and got to take pictures of early, you know, models. It was interesting to look at that.
Any chance to hang out with the sound audio wizards of speaker creation at that company has to be just a fun ride.
I would imagine. Something I didn't expect this week, Ultimate Ears Boom 3 and Mega Boom 3. One, they do incredibly expensive in-ear monitors. They also do Bluetooth speakers. The Boom 3 and Mega Boom 3 get some pretty consistently high ratings because they sound pretty good. They're sticks that radiate audio in 360 degrees. They're waterproof, so you can throw them in the pool.
Excellent.
They're very excited about the One Touch to Music with Magic Button, which I wasn't excited about until I read the following description. The freshly introduced Magic Button on top of each speaker means you're just one touch from your favorite playlist on Apple Music, iOS, and Deezer Premium on Android. No more fishing your phone in a bag or navigating menus to find what you're looking for. Simply play, pause, and skip tracks directly on the speaker.
But you can also just Bluetooth right into that thing, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah, well, you know.
But there you go. You don't get the Magic Button.
Yeah, don't you want a Magic Button?
Magic Button action.
We used to have a Magic Button on DLTV. They float. They're IP67 rated. They're talking about 15 hours of battery life for the Boom 3, 20 hours for the Mega Boom 3, which is really impressive.
Cool. All about the dust and waterproofing.
Yeah.
Especially considered where these speakers end up. Little bits of lint to
we
sand.
We started taking
to
a Bluetooth speaker with us camping. Which we keep at modest volumes, and we often turn off because I have been at the campsite next to the people with the
we showed up with a couple of big trucks, a semi tractor trailer with way too many people,
yeah.
And we kept everyone awake, and we were that group.
You were those people. Why would you want to be those people? The thing that really amuses me about these, though, that I really, 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 really want to see demonstrated, like at Burning Man or something, is so the Party Up feature in their app, apparently you can connect up to 150 speakers.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like, normally I don't get really excited about, like, because, like, when you go to the UE website, right, the ultimateears.com website, live to the ultimate, and there's, like, dancing kids, and there's sandboarding, which is running a snowboard down a sand dune, and there's, like, you know, some particularly hip-looking gentleman underwater. But I really would like to see a party with, like, 100 people. All jamming the same stuff.
That'd be pretty sweet to have a bunch of portable speakers all synced like that. Yeah. I'm curious if they do anything like a mesh network, or where it's basically one device that has to be able to reach signal-wise all of the others. I'm assuming it's like that instead of some crazy mesh system, but still.
Yeah.
Still, if you and your buddies all throw down and get one, you can light up a room with one of these, apparently. Or a larger area with 100 plus people.
That just fascinates me to even think about.
Kind of funny.
We've got a roll too at home that my boys love. That's the one that's shaped like a giant pill with a big plus and minus in the fabric for the volume control. It is really impressive. I mean, there's no bass below 100 hertz, but, you know, for casual listening, it's pretty fantastic. It is waterproof. They ship it with a floaty.
Excellent. So I wonder then, it sounds like it's a little probably more than just splash resistant. That's something that could actually float in
the pool. It's waterproof. I mean, all
these are...
I'm more
concerned of when when the person jumps out of the pool soaking wet and immediately grabs the speaker to fiddle with it. That's where I'm really concerned about the water. They're shoving wet fingers on buttons and things like that. Keep it tight.
They're not kidding. I mean, they aren't showing the hipster with the short blonde hair, you know, in the pool. It's literally, they're like,
I'm not throwing my Riva S in the pool. Let me tell you that right now.
No, that would be awkward.
It has like dust. I think it has dust and some moisture ingress protection, but still, it ain't something I'm getting near the water. So
IP67, right? So when you look at an IP rating, right, the first number is the dust rating.
Okay. I wonder if that's like 6 out of 10.
No, yeah, but I think
probably doesn't go that high.
There's 1 through 6. So like 3 is protection from tools, thick wires. 4 is protection from wire screws or similar objects. 5 is partial protection from contact with harmful dust. And 6 is protection from contact with harmful dust. That means like you're going to Baja, there's going to be a lot of silt. So when you look at the second one, the 7 means it's protected from immersion with water for a depth up to 1 meter for up to 30 minutes. So like don't take it diving to 50 meters.
Totally.
And don't tie it to a weight and drop it to the bottom of the 12-foot section of the pool for 3 days.
But with a floaty, thing should be just fine.
Well, that's the thing, right? The Roll 2 is the little one they have, you know, which has, you know, it fits in your palm. It's got a little strap on the back. But those the ones they just announced, the updates to the Boom 3 and the Mega Boom 3, those speakers float. They don't need a floaty. They actually float by themselves. Chuck them in the pool, listen to the music, have a great day.
Very cool.
So
I'd be curious, too, if any of them incorporate anything like a transducer for just driving some of that sound into the water. So if you are swimming laps or you're spending more time underwater than above, you could still hear the audio.
I'm now envisioning you in a pool swimming laps with, like, you know,
music playing.
I was going to say the Mega
Boom. No headphones necessary.
Like on paracord being dragged behind you through the water. In any case.
Back in school, we used to have a transducer we used to throw in the pool. It works surprisingly well. And I like, for something about the way sound travels underwater, it seems like it's coming from everywhere. So
apparently we need to get like a dozen of these, throw them in a pool, sink them.
Just no more than 3 feet.
Party up. And then just everybody can just party in the pool.
That would be awesome.
Oh my goodness.
The weather's perfect.
IFA is going on in Europe right now, and a couple announcements from Sennheiser. Something I did not expect was they've added a new model to the Momentum lineup, which is wireless earbuds, completely wireless earbuds, 7mm dynamic drivers in those, Bluetooth support, AAC for iOS devices, and then aptX, an aptX low latency, which is the sort of upgraded wireless audio transmission technology, which sounds absolutely fantastic in the HD1 over ears I've been playing around with. Quote, transparent hearing, unquote. That is their name for the earbud's ability to let in ambient sounds, i.e. the don't get run over by traffic feature, which is a big plus in the Bay Area, especially if you're listening for high-speed Tesla
Model S's. I love my in-ear
S's.
Phones, but yeah. It isolates me from the rest of the world pretty significantly, completely.
completely, you know, direct access to Apple Siri, Google Assistant. They're saying 4 hours of battery life and, quote, 12 hours of all-day enjoyment with the case slash charger, which is very stylish. Shipping mid-November, about $300. I'm very curious to hear these because I'll be perfectly honest with you. Google's wireless earbuds are atrocious. They just...
let's get the Rev 2.
Yeah. why don't you hire somebody that knows what music sounds like to design those earbuds, please? Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the AirPods. We've seen a lot of
AirPods or Google's?
Well, I'm not a big fan of either one of them. Google's wireless in-ears are...
I like the design of the AirPods, though. I mean, just that cord-free design. And I see so many people... With hearing, but I've talked to enough people who use those frequently if they have a hearing issue in one ear or the other or both to just improve their ability just walking around town.
Right.
And being able to, you know, not only enjoy whatever it is they're wanting to listen to, but just some of the audio enhancement technology that goes into those things just to make, you know, general life a little easier. It's one thing I see a lot of these companies kind of shooting for is the sense that, you know what, we can get good sound out of these, we can make a great accessory, but how about for folks who would normally either require some sort of hearing assistance of some kind just to navigate the real world or just to, you know, make life a little easier.
Yeah.
All the better.
I say I'm not a huge fan. So it's the Google Pixel Buds and then the AirPods. I think both of them could use significant improvement in terms of
more haptics.
Reproduction. Yeah. More awesome. And I guess technically the Pixel Buds have that cable between them, that nylon sort of paracordish cable that go between them. I wish the Momentum True Wireless had some more battery life or some more battery life in the case, but I say that about every single wireless, every single battery powered thing I touch.
It's not enough.
The other thing they're doing is more demos of that 5.1.4 soundbar, or basically they're saying 5.1.4 audio from that single soundbar. They're demoing that at CES. Everybody loves so much. So the idea that it's 13 drivers, a lot of processing emulates, 5.1 or 5 surround sound speakers, a subwoofer, and then 4 channels of Atmos. So they're basically like, okay, we got Dolby Atmos, MPEG-H, DTS:X. Using their upmix technology, that would be their, you know, digital signal processing that makes a stick full of drivers sound like as close as they can to speakers scattered around the room. Early 2019, they're picking a ship time, a ship date. So I would assume after CES 2019, still no pricing on that.
We'll probably see a final product then come January.
Very curious to hear the final product.
That was one of the busiest booths for sound-related gear that I saw at the show. There were just a wad. Granted, the power outage helped, but it dragged everyone out of the central hall and over to the other halls. But still, there was a line to listen and demo their prototype unit. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Sennheiser has for this Momentum style. It's not Momentum style, but just their is it called Ambio soundbar? Is that the
Ambio?
That is their official name for it.
You know, I will double check the announcement right now.
Going to be a good competitor, I think, with some of the premium soundbars out there from companies like Sonos and others who seem to do it really well on the audio side of things. Then it comes into how well and easy is it to integrate into the rest of your gear, which generally with a soundbar?
Ambio soundbar.
There we go. Digging it, man. Hey, also at IFA 2018 in Berlin, Samsung announced, ta-da, an 8K QLED TV. They're calling this series the Q900FN. 8K resolution, of course. This baby is going to feature, quote-unquote, the Direct Full Array Elite backlighting system. They're claiming 4,000 nits of peak brightness, and that's, I was guessing, about 5,000, considering a prototype I witnessed a couple months ago. This TV will also feature an AI-based upscaler technology, as well as the, quote-unquote, bless you.
Thank you.
As well as something called the 8K Quantum Video Processor. And similar to what Sony was demonstrating at CES in 2018 back in January, going to 8K requires a lot of video horsepower in order to upscale content or to make even 4K content look great with the extra pixels. This is Samsung's solution for that, and they've been working on AI-based either upscalers or converters for SDR to HDR and things like that for a while now. So I'll be really curious to see how this new chip handles all of that kind of content. No price or availability yet. I'm thinking this will be front and center come the 2019 CES in a few months. sizes, 65 inch, 75, 82, and 85. And from all the current news reports I've looked at so far, I haven't seen a single mention of any of the screen technology beyond the backlighting system. While the prototype I looked at was a quantum dot on glass design, and that featured a glass sheet with the quantum dot materials printed onto it directly. It is a way to make a more efficient TV and one that also has the wide color palette you really do need for really enjoying HDR content in its full and glorious form as it is today. But I haven't seen any mention yet of the actual, what is that sheet of glass or tech that's going to drive their quantum-based lighting system. I'm guessing it's still the QDOG quantum dot on glass, but I guess we'll get more information in the coming months. Speaking of Cydia coming up next week, Sony's already introduced their new 4K projectors for this year, and this came out in the last day or two. They have three new models, starting with the VPL VW870ES, the VPL VW570ES, and then finally the new entry-level 4K projector, the VW270ES. Gone are the 300 series projectors. They've actually, instead of having multiple, I guess, SKUs of the relatively similar technology, they're deciding just to move everything that was in that 300 series up to the new 570ES. I guess everyone's going to be most interested in the VW870ES, is as it features a 4K light engine, laser light engine that's dumping out 2,200 lumens, $25,000 most likely for that projector. And it does feature something really cool, I thought. Not only an all-new glass, completely glass element lens system, but a digital detail enhancement that'll improve the clarity around the edges of the picture. And seeing this tested, at least initially, one of the general issues you'll have with any projector is that when you do the focus on them, the center of the picture is always going to be looking the best. That's where the lenses have the least amount of distortion. It's fairly easy to get very crisp imagery right in the middle. But then when you get out to the edges, you can introduce errors in the sense of things like a little more fringing, a little less alignment with the optics itself, so that things aren't quite as detailed. And what this is doing, this digital detail enhancement, which is menu selectable, you can turn it on or off, but it will add some sharpness or sharpening enhancement to the borders of the projected image so that you're getting more clear detail across the entire picture, especially if you tend to sit close to something like a 4K screen at 100 plus inches. That could be interesting. And I like the fact that they have at least made it an option. So if it's not something, if you're a purist at heart and you don't care about, you know, slightly degraded detail around the edges of a projected image, boom, you have an option for that or not. For the 570ES, everything else from here on out is lamp-based 4K. The 570 does have a dynamic iris system and a black frame insertion system, and it's pushing 1,800 lumens for $8,000. And the beauty of having both the dynamic iris and the black frame insertion technologies built into this single projector is that the dynamic iris allows you then to fully optimize the light output for given scenes. If you want to, say, in a darker scene, close the iris more so that the black is even blacker. Or at the same point, when you have a very bright scene, the iris can open wide up for more light transmission. That's a useful feature you tend to find on more expensive projectors. That tends to be one of the first features to go when you're dealing with more affordable units. Black frame insertion, on the other hand, would be perfect for things like sports or any kind of content where you really don't want any kind of video processing aside from the basics. And this would simply improve per frame detail, especially with fast motion content, which would be perfect for sports. And for the 270, the entry-level 4K, 4K for everyone, 1,500 lumens, an upgraded video processor similar to what they're using on the 570 and above, and an improved lag reduction mode for folks into gaming on these projectors, which is a glorious experience. That's going to have a list price of $5,000. Now, chances are these will all be slightly cheaper come retail launch,
right?
But that's what the MSRP is on them. Unknowns for me, really, the final color performance. One of the oddities with Sony 4K projectors is that they don't actually use a separate set of light filters to improve color saturation the way that JVC does on their premium projectors. And some initial testing of a pre-production unit that I looked at earlier today showed that the 870's color performance seemed a little closer to Rec 709-ish rather than something like DCI color that I have seen JVC projectors be able to produce with a separate filter. Now, when you do enable HDR modes with a wide color palette on a JVC projector, it takes about 10 seconds for the filters to actually switch out between the lamps mechanically and drop in the tighter, less light emitting filters, but at the same point, greater color saturation. Right. So I'll be really curious to see, especially for the 870. I would be disappointed if they can't hit well over 90% DCI color with that, but we'll see. And not to leave JVC out of anything, they did today post a teaser video for the upcoming CEDIA trade show. They didn't actually announce anything in this stupid teaser video. They showed something that might be the new projector. So everyone's current guess is true native 4K imagers instead of the current 1080p with eShift technology. One new model, at least according to Mr. John Archer over at Forbes, will feature 8K eShift, so likely a 4K imager being enhanced to produce even greater resolution above 4K. And Mr. Archer also had an opportunity to preview some of these new projectors, and he seemed plenty pleased with what he witnessed. Ah, what is it about JVC projectors I love so much? It would be number one, the black level. Their ability to produce inky dark black in a projection environment is second to none. And in addition to that, given it's a mechanically based filter system, but still, JVC has very good color saturation on their premium projectors. And bumping everything up to true 4K imagery, well, we'll see how much that really matters or not going forward. But it's just kind of like one of those checkbox features I'm glad to see finally migrate its way into JVC's lamp-based land.
It seems like so many of the affordable, when I say affordable, I'm going to say well under $5,000, like getting to that $2,000 range for a projector. It seems like they are all doing some type of shifting where they basically say, well, it's shifting so fast, you can't tell it's not 4K. And I get this nervous facial expression that's like, couldn't you just do native 4K?
It really comes down to what parts are available. Mm-hmm. From Texas Instrument, who does the DLP technology, they feature two parts currently that effectively either double or quadruple the actual resolution of the DLP chips to achieve that 4K resolution. Right. And the switching speed of DLP is so fast that it literally can, due to our persistence of vision, be able to create an image that does reveal true 4K resolution. So if you have a very high-performance imager that can manipulate light like that, why not make it the most affordable part you can by, you know, quartering or halving the actual number of mirrors on that chip and drive them in such a way that it does still achieve the same effect?
Right.
That is a good point. Now, when you get into, like, commercial cinema, there are 4K DLP native chips, but you're not going to find that on any projector with anything short of a five-figure price tag.
Right.
So
well beyond my simple reach.
Yeah, and as much as I love laser light engines and projectors, and with true 4K resolution, those are expensive. We were talking about the $9,000 Hisense projector.
Right.
That is, in and of itself, pretty cool as well. Suddenly, the Sony's 4K laser projector at $25,000. I assume the engineers at Sony have done probably a terrific job in terms of its absolute performance with SDR and HDR content, and it probably looks damn good right out of the box. But still, these are not cheap devices by any means.
No, but I mean,
but if you're building that perfect room.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking forward to CEDIA, right? Lots of, you know, Samsung's there, LG's there, Sony's there. Digital Projections doing announcements on Friday morning. I'll see if I can get a look-see at the JVC booth.
Epson absolutely fantastic there. Company for DLP-based projectors.
Yeah, and they do ones that are, you know, the size of a small Volkswagen. Actually, I'll say the size of a small doghouse or dog crate. But again, you know, if you're like, yeah, you know, we're pouring 3 feet of concrete to make sure that the sound of, you know, any truck moving in the surrounding 100 yards doesn't make it through the walls of my perfect home theater.
No vibrations.
They should be on your short list, you know, along with Stuart for your screen and all the other wonderful things. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing.
I'm finding myself being more judgmental about all of these 4K projectors at any price point. I'm more focused on color at this point than anything else. Mm-hmm. That is the thing I want to see improved sooner than later. Right. And technologies like we've talked about, the dual laser, using two colors of lasers to achieve something in the realm of affordability that can give you that high 90s DCI color coverage, you know, is something that is, it's there, but it's still too expensive, or it's about a year away from being, you know, in consumer price levels. With HDR and 4K video, that color to me and that ability to do those accurately represent very saturated, like a neon sign or an amazing paint job.
Are you saying color accuracy is important to the movie or television experience in a home theater?
Or just having colors that are saturated at least to the spec Hollywood is using.
Right.
And when it's not...
There's so much pain in your face right now. I wish everyone could see what you look like because...
It's easier to do on flat panels.
Yeah.
With the materials they use, they can achieve these very saturated color points. But when you start getting into projection,
right,
man, you've got to spend a lot of money today if you want something that does it all in the 4K realm with the HDR effect as it is.
And also, you know, and that's not even considering the fact that most people are in environments where they have light interfering with their projection.
True.
Their projector and screen, their projection experience. Yeah. By the way, I just want to say, in the realm of affordability, that's a t-shirt.
Because that's a different value for every person walking this planet. So I am frequently taking a look at, you know, $600 1080p projectors. And I'm amazed at what you can get nowadays for entry level solid technology, you know, lamp-based, but still, it's going to last.
Yeah. It's amazing what you can get for $650 for a 4K 55-inch television for your living room.
And I appreciate the solid-state lighting systems using lasers, usually, and I haven't seen an LED-based system that's bright enough for me to really...
Right.
Although, I want to say digital projections actually makes a very good LED-based projector, RGB LED, and it not only offered some of the best color saturation I'd ever seen, its ability to flash on and off so fast could produce super dark black levels as well. There are examples of that, but again, that's a five-figure projector, and it's just, for a lot of people, it's like,
A five-figure projector with, if memory serves, some pretty serious mounting and power requirements.
Because once you start approaching $10,000 for anything, it's like, well, should I get the 77-inch LG OLED or Sony's OLED that based on the LG panel, or should I go projection and get up to 100-plus inches? So,
a decision I will probably never have to make.
Oh, one day. Everyone must choose.
Yeah, I think I'm going to continue to circle at the Epson sort of price
I will say
range.
Also, too, going back to that entry-level 4K projector from Sony, I recently calibrated one of the 260 ES models. That's the one you buy today. And the general upgrades, especially with the video processing and improved lag reduction and likely even a better optic, I think that might be the best bang for the buck in terms of what's improved over one generation coming out of Sony, at least, with their entry-level projector. Granted, yeah, $5,000 still a lot, but damn. It's hard for me to choose between that and maybe, say, a $5,000 JVC. They both do different things really well. And JVC, just the way their light engine works, they can do black really, really good for just overall terrific contrast, and that leads directly to saturation of color.
There's still, I mean, it's amazing when you look, like, you go up to Projector Central and you start looking at their, you know, where they divide things into, like, up to $10,000, up to $3,000. And it's amazing to realize when you're looking at these, you know, an Optoma UHZ65, that's 3,000 lumens, a Sony VPL, that's 1,500 lumens at 4960 by 2160. That Optoma is running like 3840 by 2160, but I think that's shifting 0.7 inch DLP.
It's flickering fast enough to provide that full resolution. The thing is, though, I am leery of projector lumen output ratings. Anything that just states 3,000 is in some hideous mode that you would never use. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, when Sony lays down what the light output of one of their projectors is, it tends to be a lot more realistic in terms of a mode you would actually consider using. Any of these projectors that claim, you know, 2,500, 3,000 lumens, that's usually in its quote-unquote vivid mode, where you generally have such a green cast to the picture. It's it's not really watchable. I mean, except for, you know, sure, I'm going to use this in the twilight hours of the afternoon to get the sports game outside and in the backyard, but still.
It's yeah, I mean, it's amazing to realize you're talking about, you know, less than 3/4 of an inch being the size of the device that is emitting the light that is being amplified by the giant ass bulb or lasers to hit your, in my case, 100-inch screen. So
those tiny little mirrors.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, the pricing of this stuff's all over the place. But when you're looking at that, they're like sort of their top 10 sub-$3,000 sub-$3,000 projectors. Like, okay, there's the UHD D60. That's selling for like $1,800, but the majority of them are in 1920 by 1080.
I mean, the size or the price difference between something that starts at entry level 1080p for you know, $600, $700 versus something that's closer to $3,000, generally, you're going to have better glass, better optics, which is key to everything, and other very usable features like lens shift for placement of the product once you want to install it. With a lot of the least expensive projectors out there, you sacrifice its ability to be placed just anywhere and have it conform to that room rather than you have to put it in just the right spot and then deal with it. And that's just something to keep in mind when you're looking at different things. And I'm a person who would rather have a little more flexibility in the installation to be able to put that projector exactly where you want it and then have the optics be able to handle shifting that image left, right, up, down, and having the clarity just to provide the best experience possible. And damn it, if any of these projectors would just make that leap to that dual color laser so I can get my DCI-P3 on more projectors. That's what I really want. I want better color on projectors. Better accurate color for HDR. SDR, they're all pretty damn fantastic.
It's amazing how good so many of and actually the thing that was
some of the very best devices I look at in terms of video reproduction with accurate grayscale and color are projectors.
Yes.
They're
1080p projectors.
Way more linear than any flat panel TV you'll look at.
Well, you have a single light source rather than a collection of light sources.
Yep. That's part of it. And just that simplicity adds to the appeal for me.
I'm a simple creature. The one complaint I have about the 3500, the Epson 3500 I'm running at home, is it would be nice if it were quieter. And, you know.
That baby's a bit of a light cannon. And it's not the...
I don't mind the light cannon part. I mind the fan that keeps the light cannon from lighting the projector on fire. Speaking of hot, Brian found a fix for his too damn hot home theater room. he emailed ask@avxl.com. Patrick, Robert, thank you so much for talking about my heat issues on the show. I wanted to send you a follow-up. My house is only about 8 years old, so the attic is very well insulated. I don't think the heat issues are coming from up there. The heat wasn't an issue in years past. It only seems to have started since I upgraded my gear. But good news. I wound up getting a higher Serenity Series 6000 BTU window AC unit, and it is super quiet. You can't even hear it when the theater is going. Even running on high, it's barely audible, and it doesn't make the room freezing, but it's more than livable now, even on the hottest days. I wanted to share in case anyone else has the same issue and has a window available. This was the way to go. Thanks for all the great shows and keep up the great work, Brian. And thanks for sharing that, Brian, because they basically wrap the compressor on this one. They wrap a sound blanket around the compressor on this one, and they're claiming like 44 dB on low. So, you know.
Decent.
Yeah. You know, and the farther away it is from your primary seating position, the quieter 44 dB is going to seem. Is it ideal? No. Is it better than sitting quietly sweating and staining the couch?
Seriously, you've created this awesome room with no ventilation. You have to do something.
You have to do something.
You're running all your prime electronics in there, and it's like, oh, at least you're not dealing with a plasma display.
Oh, my goodness. And a plasma display in a small room is an experience I don't miss.
Just get some rocks and pour water over them and let's sauna.
No, thank you. Greg Thomas, a.k.a. at G Thomas on the Twitter, asked for an update about Robert's full of Sony combo. So you picked up it at my suggestion. You picked up a shit full of two and a set of Sony MDR7506s like that. Or,
thank you, Mr. Norton.
Or a Sony 7506 plus a AudioQuest Dragonfly.
Exactly.
Or those are like my, you know, you want to figure out what your music sounds like. This is a great place to start.
I 100% agree with that. I went with the Fula for its design more than anything. I literally wanted a physical volume knob.
Yeah.
No technical other reason.
It's nice to be, well, you have infinite adjustability.
That is nice. And I'm not clicking into Windows to change my audio ever. I kind of leave that all alone and just use the volume knob by itself. This combo is an ideal baseline for anything else or next that I listen to. It far surpassed my expectations and its performance with a variety of content. And at first, I thought maybe I was trading something off going from my gaming headphones to this in terms of bass reproduction. But really what it came down to was that the Sony MDR-7506s are just simply more accurate than the relatively inexpensive gaming headphones I used to use. And I realized how much the gaming headphones in particular were just kind of muffling up bass to make it sound more boomy rather than accurately depicting it. Because I find there's no lack of bass response, at least to my ears, for the 7506s. They can deliver and deliver it crisp and cleanly. And I find it is just a fantastic combo for the price. I'm not running out to spend $1,000 on anything for my headphones because I don't have enough experience with this kind of gear. And it's like I need a starting point. And the pair of these devices that I use the Fola connected directly to my workstation, and it is the audio device. And I will say there are some nerdy things about the Fola that it makes me smile every time I look at the Windows device manager. And how they've named the device within the device manager and little things like that.
But it makes you happy.
It's also like a little block of extruded metal.
Right.
So it feels good for its relatively small size. It doesn't take up a lot of space, and it's got a little heft to it because of its metal construction. So it doesn't feel like, and I swear I probably even spilled a drink across the damn thing at some point. I think it went under it. I think it was floating just above where the water was flying across my desk the other day, but it's held up to that, and it's never let me down so far, and I use it for anything. That's my primary audio for my workstation. I don't have speakers connected. I only use the 7506s plus the Fola USB output right into it, right into the headphones, and I see no indication that the Fola doesn't have all the power in the world to drive those headphones, right. Let alone probably some other things that would require even more power as well. But
you don't need a huge amount of power in a headphone amplifier unless you're running some pretty serious planar magnetics, or you're running like a 250 ohm or 600 ohm.
I haven't looked up the specs on the Fola to see what the noise level is and things like that, but it's all imperceptible to me. It's so clean sounding. I really do appreciate it. And
yes.
Even for gaming, it just makes fantastic for just picking apart audio and just really paying attention to detail, or editing the occasional podcast. It is it's a perfect combo, man. And I really thank you again for that recommendation. I can find very little to fault with any of it, to be honest with you.
Given the amount of time you've spent guiding me through projectors and televisions over the years, it's the least I can do. But seriously, you don't have to. One of the things I want people to understand is, yes, there are some amazing, $700, $800, $4,000, $100 billion, $1 zillion audio things out there. But
I think I paid $100 for the Fola and $80 for the Sony MDRs.
And this is I would start with the Sony MDRs. I would upgrade to a discrete DAC and headphone amp. One of the things I've noticed about using Android is there's an LG G4 I had, and the output on that was pretty mediocre. Partially, there was the headphone amp levels weren't very good. The DACs were probably okay, but the headphone output on that was a mess. I've got this Moto G6, and it sounds pretty good, but the output level is so weak. And I'm not a person who wants to turn up. I don't want my eardrums to meet in the center of my skull.
No, that sounds a lot like my phone, Samsung Galaxy phone. It's a couple generations old now, but I find myself having to turn it way the hell up to where the phone warns me. It's like, you're going into a range where you could possibly harm your hearing.
Right.
And I'm like, no, it's not.
Well, I get so if you want to listen to music for 7 hours, 85 dB is the max you should go.
Totally.
And you probably shouldn't listen at that level or higher.
Keep turning it down.
For more than an hour. Yeah, turning it down is better. If you don't have a quiet room, then get some sealed earbuds. If you're working all day in like a data center, get a set of headphones with active noise cancellation. And we've talked about several of those. But if you're in a data center where you've got like 90 dB levels because of the 11,000 fans going on the 11,000
computers. I've never been in a quiet data center.
Yeah, you will eventually permanently damage your hearing.
And I like the idea of using noise-canceling headphones instead, because chances are you'd still be able to hear things around you, like somebody yelling at you to watch out for the falling XYZ. Rather than, say, my love of, you know, in-ear phones, especially with, you know, good noise-blocking tips on them, those can pretty much isolate me to the point where I don't hear anything. It's like wearing earplugs, effectively.
Which is a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Great for sleeping on planes.
Yeah, there are lots of, I mean, I'm still a huge fan of AudioQuest Nighthawk, which is a fantastic, incredibly neutral headphone. One of the best headphones I've ever heard for any money is Mr. Speaker's Aeon. Flow, which sells for $800. They have an open back version of that now, along with a closed back. You know, you want to spend thousands, I can help you do that. But it's amazing if you've been using the earbuds that come with your phone, or, you know, a set of headphones of indeterminate origin, that came, you know what I mean? Like if you got a set of headphones where you've never heard of the brand before and you got them off of Amazon for like less than $30, you know, those Sony MDR-7506s are a really nice place to start.
Comfortable set of headphones, too. Yeah. I can wear them for hours on end. They are closed back, and they fit completely over my ears, which is something I just kind of appreciate. I don't want anything crushing my ears against my head. Small little cans, so to speak. Yeah. But these do not. And the build quality overall seems decent for what it is. And I'm more about just the performance of the individual drivers and things like that. And for that,
they're shocking.
It is my new baseline. Yeah. I will compare everything going forward from this point forward to the 7506s, because it's just for the money. It's tough for me to point at anything else and say that. Well, I'd go ask you first, but
well, you know, the thing is to try something and then, you know, listen to your favorite stuff. Make sure you've got good, you know, you pay for the premium Spotify. You know, you're on Tidal, or you rip your CDs to FLAC, which is what I prefer to do still. And you listen for like 6 months. And then you try some new stuff and see. Because what you'll also notice is that as you kind of get a baseline set, then you can listen to stuff and be like, does this have more bass or less bass? More treble or less treble? If I turn the volume up, does this headphone distort or start to sound like crap?
The MDR-7506s really come across to me as something that's like, here is reference quality reproduction. We're not trying to influence that sound in any creative way. It's just, this is it.
Yeah.
And it feels very accurate.
I've seen them in you know, audio studio, like, you know, recording studios, a metric ton of editors I know use them.
I see why now.
Yeah. They're a nice set of cans.
When you're trying to do some critical listening, that's a great place to start for the money. I'm just done.
Oh, my goodness.
Lawn care.
That's probably our sign to wrap this one up as the crazy mower slides by the front of Mr. Heron's house.
I love a well-done lawn.
One last email before we go. Daniel wrote, ask@avxl.com. I was wondering if you plan to bring access to your podcast and the other podcast that all of you are involved with to the Stitcher app. Would greatly appreciate, such as it's my primary podcast app. Thanks. He adds, my next comment is for you, Patrick, for your AV closet. Why not get a vented door? They have doors with a vent built in at the top at the bottom. You can then mount an exhaust fan on the inside of the vent at the top, allow some slack in the cable for opening and closing the door, then bam, you're all set, no big holes, and it's completely reversible. So first up, Daniel, I have applied to get us on Stitcher. Don't know if they will accept our application or not, because that's their thing, not our thing. But let us know where else we should be. Not just Stitcher, but if you would like to hear this podcast somewhere that it is not currently, do us a favor and email and tell us, ask@avxl.com.
Mildly related to that, too, if you happen to be one of our Patreon supporters, check your email and make sure you've grabbed that RSS link for that custom feed. That's just for the Patreon donors we have.
You will automatically get the podcast before any non-patrons if you, A, are a patron, and B, grab the RSS link.
And it also gives me an extra opportunity to listen through it a couple more times to see if I can edit out the ums, ahs, sos, buts.
Basically.
Oh, my goodness. But I had somebody ask me the other day. It's like, hey, I don't see episode so-and-so. Oh, I am a patron supporter. It's like, go. Yeah. And then suddenly I was like, okay, I couldn't find that link on the Patreon website.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, okay, I remember it was in an email. Sure enough, the link just was emailed right to me, and I just cut and paste that right into my favorite pod catcher, and I'm good to go.
So one more reason to become a patron. We're also going to have our next patron hangout. We're behind on these. I apologize for that. September 20th, 5 p.m. Come join us. If you're a patron at a certain level, you get to do a hangout with Robert and I. And we just wanted to get the word out early.
2 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific?
5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, because that's late. Well, I've noticed.
Oh, yeah. I got that ass backwards.
Well, you know, we'll try to, you know, fire it up a little early, but 5 p.m. allows us. Most of the population in the United States is on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
And this is after most people are done with their commute and probably their dinner. And then it's late enough that people at the end of the workday can join in too.
Very cool.
Google Hangout. We'll send you a link September 20th, 5 p.m. So everyone has lots of advance notice. So we expect you all in there. Daniel had emailed about the vented door. If the AV closet was not in the living room and next to the front door and one of the first things you see when you walk into the house, I would be down with a vented door. But even my own primitive sense of aesthetics does not want to deal with a giant vent in the door.
I hear you.
Basically what it comes down to.
There's style points.
Yeah, well, we have a rule in our house because one of the previous owners didn't like the Craftsman interior and tried to kind of turn it into an Eichler. In the sort of like, I read Popular Mechanics in 1962 and I'm going to do this thing in my house. And, you know, the
gut this historic master craftsmanship. Like, part who's going to want this?
Who's going to want
15, yeah. 20 years?
Well, you know, a lot of people. Yeah, the upside is it made it possible for us to afford the house, but the downside is most of the fireplace surrounds bricks in a ball of concrete in the backyard. Do not get me started. But there's sort of a rule we have is the kind of, you know, Hippocratic oath, first do no harm.
Right.
Nothing to degrade the aesthetics of the home. Everything is to elevate the aesthetics of the home at this point, Daniel. And I assure you that there would not be spousal or, for that matter, personal approval of putting a big vented door in. But maybe, because there's some pretty creative vent stuff that shows up and electronics cooling stuff that shows up at
CES. Send it right to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Just blow it up into the attic.
No. Also, don't get me started on sealing living spaces and decoupling the living space from the exterior using insulation, because I will put your ass to sleep on that one.
Yeah. It's all about soundproofing. Air transfer, specifically.
Did you say F1's now showing up on the ESPN app on Roku?
It has this season. Last season, it was on NBC's app. Mm-hmm. And now they are literally streaming the Sky F1 broadcast on ESPN. And it's, if you happen to enjoy Formula One racing and you would like to stream it, it is available on through the ESPN app. And I really do dig it. The hardest part for me is just not reading the news, because I'm, you know, usually it's in overseas somewhere. And I end up like opening a news feed and it's like, oh, so-and-so won the race. It's like, I was about to watch it. Stop.
Spoiler.
No. I get this very good selective gaze where it's like the words F1 pop up. It's like, I'll skip that article. Just come back to that in a couple hours.
Alt tab.
It's an exciting season this year and I'm digging it. They have some new safety gear and it has already proven itself to be worthy in terms of hopefully saving some lives in crazy wrecks.
That would be good.
So,
fewer wrecks, fewer lost lives.
More baseball. Go A's.
Oh, my goodness.
The damn A's. They're fighting for first place. Jinx it all.
We're like 2 miles from the stadium. We'll spoil it.
Astros.
We've heard. It's funny because we went from this super hot, super dry kind of tail end of August or tail end of July, beginning of August. And then the fog came in. And my house, I don't think we're a mile and a half from the Oakland A's stadium.
You hear it all.
And when the fog comes, it's crazy because they, nobody for the Oakland A's.
All that sound bouncing off the marine layer.
Yeah. And then you hear like, take me out to the...
Crazy.
It's the strangest thing. So my wife will be like, oh, what was that? I'm like, somebody scored a run. She's like, okay. That's that baseball thing. I'm like, yes, dear. Calman 2018, you said they got some fixes for the LG OLED LUT the LUT calibration.
Yeah. They dumped a new release candidate version the other day, and I loaded it up and tried it out on a C8 OLED, and I will say it seemed to work a little bit better than previous iterations. They had a new workflow specific for the LG TVs. They also added workflows for the new 2018 Samsung QLED televisions that can have an AutoCal style feature as well. The cool thing for the 2018 Samsung QLED LCD TVs is that they now feature 3 levels of color correction compared to the single level of color correction that was available in previous models. I will probably get a chance to try that out pretty soon. I am still kind of leery of AutoCal on LCDs in general, but I will say the new LG workflows for their OLED televisions, I ran through some recalibration of Technicolor's HDR preset and the game mode HDR preset on a C8 from LG. And it was better overall, but I'm still finding it necessary to do a minimum of at least an hour of measurements on the TV before I write that file in order to get good accuracy out of it. So it's still kind of time consuming when you're talking about at least an hour per preset. Ideally, you dedicate at least a couple hours if you're trying to get the absolute best performance out of it. And some changes within the software seem to speed up the number of measurements per hour I'm taking. So
good.
I'm getting up to about 1700 measurements per hour now.
Nice.
It's still time consuming as hell, but at least it's better. And the results, I'll be looking at another C8, a 77-inch C8 coming up, I think, in a week or two. I want to try this on a few more of the 2018 LG OLEDs, just to see if maybe there was something funky with that one I looked at last week or not. But I need to compare and contrast the various flavors of the 2018 OLEDs. And I'm looking forward to it.
There you have it.
Man, so much calibration goodness.
More calibration goodness.
God, what is that? Malinois? Or what's the name of that dog type that looks kind of like a German Shepherd? But the owner of this C8 OLED I was working on had one of those.
The Belgian Shepherd?
It was just a beautiful dog and had the craziest fur. Man, looked like an ex-police dog. But still,
yeah.
I just got to say, shout out to that breed. That's a pretty nice animal overall.
The Belgian Malinois.
Basically, yeah, it's a Belgian Shepherd.
Not as cute as my roommate's pug terrier mix. he's lovable in his own way.
Yeah, we've...
But still. Anyway.
We have the half tangent. Husky, half Sorry. Shepherd.
I had to work around this dog. The dog, I have like, you know, $10,000, $15,000 worth of gear set up in front of this
right.
A wall-mounted LG.
If you've never seen a Belgian Shepherd or a Malinois, these are dogs that can get really freaking big.
That, and it was also just, it was very well behaved when the owner said, don't walk that way, walk around the other way. The dog just freaking walked around the other way. And I was just like, oh, thank God. I never really had to worry about the gear going flying, which was always a benefit, I will say.
Yeah, never let an owner leave a husky in a room.
But otherwise, it laid at my feet the whole time, and it was just a lovable, quirky animal.
I admire your dedication to perfection, sir. Let us calibrate.
Yes.
That's a shepherd.
Oh, how many hours? Oh, let's let it run for an hour. Just see what happens. I went and retried the quote-unquote 5 measurement mode and the 100 measurement mode, too, with the LG C8. I need to try that on a few more TVs before I declare it just completely broken, but I'm really hoping there was something fundamentally wrong with this LG, particular LG I was working on this week. And there was something wrong with one of the presets, but we just kind of ignored that because the owner wasn't getting rid of it. I think I talked about this before too, but anyway.
We obsess. It's what we do.
I do appreciate doing LUT-based calibrations because that is the way to do it in terms of doing the best color accuracy for any display type. It just it hammers out all the little quirks and gets the errors down so low as to be almost unmeasurable. And for that, I am just immensely thankful. Actually, I'll be working on a 6 series, E6 OLED, one of the glass back ones from a couple of years ago that actually has a LUT box connected to it. And I'll be curious to see what level of performance I'm able to eke out of that thing when I go back to redo it compared to what's built into the 2018 models. So
I've been laughing, been turning, working on two things. One is I've been retuning the surround sound speakers in the living room, which is always an awkward and emotionally traumatic experience, because I start running the automated calibration noises, and various children and spouses come flying into the room to figure out why the dog is freaking out.
Yes.
Because of those strange noises they ping. But the other thing is, as I keep coming back to, we were talking about light interfering with projectors and projection screens. It is amazing to me how much a little bit of diffusion or dampening can change the way a room sounds. Because, you know, your speakers, it's not just placement within the room, but also the surfaces of the room. Like the room we're in right now has a lot of sheetrock. And boy.
Large, flat, empty spaces.
Large, flat, empty spaces.
Nice echoey.
Yeah. Slapback echo or flutter echo or whatever you want to call it. It's amazing what, you know.
Break it up with something.
Yeah.
Hang some pictures.
You know, a good cotton or wool curtain.
Yep.
You know, books that aren't arrayed as kind of a
for
wall
hard floors,
of
you
of
could
pulp.
Put a rug on the floor.
It's amazing what a rug at the sort of first point of reflection can do.
It's a big one.
To unfuxer the audio.
I was in a decent home theater the other day, and the owner didn't, for whatever reason, and this was somebody's house they owned, they put all the speakers in the ceiling, including the center channel. And I was just like,
that's an option.
It is.
Well, that, I mean, that's why the crew over, it's funny because we had talked to ELAC at CD last year and they had announced their new in-ceiling speakers, but they had given what for the in-ceiling speaker market is a huge amount of range. Like, I think they could do like 30 plus degrees of adjustment on that
speaker. See, that's the key. I think each speaker needs to have some adjustability in terms of where it's directing that energy.
Yes.
These were not adjustable.
Otherwise, it'll direct it straight down at the floor, and then it bounces off the floor and several other things in the room.
Not that the sound isn't impressive or it didn't sound good. It was just that it seemed odd a little bit. And you know what? It probably helped that the TV was mounted so high up on the wall that it's closer to the speakers than it would be if the speakers were sitting on the ground. Yeah. So,
well,
if
your audio is coming from the ceiling and your first order reflections are like the back wall, the side wall, the floor.
This was a large room too.
Yeah.
So that helped a little bit. Anyway, it was just it seems odd whenever I see like, oh, even the center channel's mounted up above the ceiling. And I'm like, okay.
That's
whatever.
Okay. I had to explain to somebody. They're like, my speakers sound muffled. I'm like, you've moved them down to the point where those chairs, because they're bookshelves kind of by a fireplace.
Oh, okay.
They didn't find the speakers aesthetically pleasing. So they moved them down. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. You've put the tweeters so that the tweeters are behind the thing that is
most directional and
that are
influenced.
Yeah. I was like, if you just get like that top inch of that,
let them peek
2 inches
over
of that speakers just high enough. Oh my goodness.
Projectors, home theater. We love it all.
We do. We don't care if you are in a dorm room and you got like $200 you've scrounged from your beer money, or if you have all of the cash and are building a dedicated room, your bunker of audio and home theater joy. We are here for you. We are curious. We are learning. You are learning, hopefully. Ask at avxl.com is the place to email us. avxl.com is the webpage with all the links to the show, how to subscribe. If you enjoy the show and you would like us to keep doing it, we would appreciate it if you became a patron. It's inexpensive. You get access to our hangouts and stuff like that. patreon.com/avxl. It's how we get paid. We're trying to avoid putting advertising in this because, well, you know, we're trying to avoid putting advertising in this.
Uninterrupted. Home theater goodness.
Entirely too much for the average human being. But for you,
the occasional tangent.
Oh, my goodness.
Into meat space.
We try to get the tangents out at the beginning of the show.
You know, we were pretty good today, but now we're stretching it out here.
We're stretching it out. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton at Patrick Norton on the Twitter. He's Robert Heron at Robert Heron on the Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Email us, ask@avxl.com, tweet at avxl.com, or tweet at Robert Heron or at Patrick Norton, and let us know what you're looking to learn or what you're curious or what you're buying next. Or we'll do probably a recording after CDX. I'll be at CD Thursday and Friday. We'll do
a brain dump from you.
A bonus episode coming up with our friend Brent Butterworth, knows everything about subwoofers. It's
sub extravaganza.
One of my favorite conversations in a long time.
Oh, good.
because Brent has been there and done that with the bass. So
I love his audio reviews.
Oh, it's good stuff. Good stuff. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
We'll catch you next week on AVXL.